from stpetecatalyst.com.
Hi, it's Bill DeYoung, and this is the St. Pete Catalyst Arts Alive podcast. It was George Harrison who said, rather pithily, if you don't know where you're going, any road will take you there. So I want to turn that on its head a little bit by saying that if you don't know where you've been, you don't know where you are. That's my way of introducing today's guest on the podcast, Rui Farias, who is the executive director of the St. Petersburg Museum of History, 101 years old. Not Rui, the museum. Hey, buddy, how are you?
I'm doing great, thank you. And I feel 101 sometimes when I get up. But
you know, they talk about this being as a city of great museums. This is the oldest museum in the city.
We are in the county, actually.
In the county?
Yes, yeah, we've been around a long, long time.
So it goes back, well, obviously, to the 20s, but can you give me a little bit of, you know, prehistoric history of this place?
And actually, it is a typical St. Pete story. So the structure that stood there on the pier approach was an aquarium. The gentleman came down, I think, from Philadelphia, had, you know, these exotic fish tanks set up, and people would pay their nickels to come in to see all the weird fish that you don't see up north. Well, then the storm of October 1921 came and took care of that building.
Wow.
He had enough of Florida, went back up north, and then we've got to credit Mary Wheeler Eaton, who moved here in the teens, who pretty much twisted the arms of city council and the mayor to turn over the property to the Historical Society, which had just been formed, and then we get a history museum.
So he turned over the property. Did they rebuild, or are there still walls that were there in the old days? From the aquarium days.
Just the land, not the walls. The actual structure that they first moved, they opened on February 11th, 1922.
Yeah, watch that.
Yeah. but the that building was actually raised in 1950 and a new structure built. That building is still there. That's our current main gallery. So when I was a kid I grew up in downtown St. Pete. So
yeah.
When I was pedaling my bike downtown every Saturday to pay my quarter to go to the History Museum, that main gallery that we have today was the entire museum at that time.
You are in the middle of fundraising for an expansion. You got money from the city, money from the county, a couple of bucks from me. It's a 10,000 square foot expansion?
11,000 square feet.
Well, everything's changed since we talked about it.
Yeah.
So tell us what that encompasses. We're going to talk history here in a minute, but I want to catch people up on what does that encompass and where is it right now?
Well, everything that we have keeps growing. Our collections and our archives keeps growing. Our want for bigger, better, cooler, modern exhibits keeps growing. So the board of directors decided that, you know, it was time that we needed to expand the museum. We have that lawn area in the front of the museum, and that's where the expansion will be built. It's almost a separate building that will be attached at the new entrance to the museum down on the pier approach itself. So that building, it's like I said, is 11,000 square feet. The first floor, ground level, will be Visit St. Pete Clearwater Welcome Center. So it'll be the official county welcome center, right, to the area, as well as a gift shop that will sell anything you can imagine from Florida, like stuff made out of shells and things we used to see when we were kids.
Oh, yeah.
Of course.
It's got coconut heads.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. The second floor, though, is what we're really excited about. It's going to be the venue for our new permanent exhibit. And we've expanded our mission a little bit to include not just St. Petersburg and Pinellas County history, but Florida history in total. So we're going to be telling the story of Florida and how our area related to that growth of the state of Florida. So that gives us the opportunity, first and foremost, to create a new modern, you know, interactive exhibit, but also get a lot of our collections and artifacts off the ground level of the museum and, you know, 30 feet up in the air above the floodplain. So that's important to us.
So where are we in the scheme of things? I mean, it's been a couple of years since this was announced.
Yes, and we've had a few delays. The pier construction was delayed, and that put us back a little bit. And then, of course, COVID put us back a lot of bit.
Yeah.
So then, of course, we signed the agreement to bring in Perry's Porch, the new, you know, cafe that's going to be part of the museum.
Right.
And so now they're under construction right now. So we have to pretty much wait for them to be finished before we can move forward. There's some things that we're being doing preliminary. We're designing the new main exhibit, those type of things. But we've kind of got to wait for them. And then, of course, fundraising. It was a $7.8, $7.9 million project that's now an $11 million project.
Wow.
So
that's cost of materials, time, the extra
labor,
1,000 square
everything.
Feet, I suppose.
Well, you know, of course, you know, when we looked at the cost of the building and the opportunity of what we could do to it, the last, I guess, piece of the new puzzle is that we decided to put a rooftop terrace on the building. So it'll be an area for, you know, parties and weddings and all kinds of stuff up there, and with an amazing view of the waterfront. So that added a little bit of cost to the building. But, it, you know, everybody from the architects, the contractors, were everybody was certain a few years ago that the cost would start to drop because we'd be all built out. And it's been the opposite. So it's a matter of me going out there knocking on some more doors.
Dare I ask how much more money you need? I mean, or do you want to leave that up into the unannounced, you know, just keep sending money, folks.
Exactly. Yes. I mean, we were very fortunate. We've received state grants.
Yes.
We've received county grants. The city actually gave us the seed money to start the whole project.
Yeah.
We've received a lot of private money. But we still need to raise, you know, a couple, $3 million to get it working on. Maybe a little more. Who knows now?
Y'all afford that's still happening, the wraparound that y'all was designing?
Today's her birthday, by the way. Happy birthday,
y'all. I told her that on Facebook this morning. Yes, it is.
So the second floor of the building basically is a solid concrete rectangular box.
Yeah.
On purpose, because we want to protect everything, you know, that's in it. And the last thing we wanted to do was just paint the solid concrete box. So I actually met Yala Ford, Mayor Kreisman's office, you know, introduced her to us, and she came back with this idea, and it was just fantastic. So we ran with it, and she's developed it. It's going to be called Intersections. It is an amazing aluminum sculpture that will wrap the building. It is an 1891 Florida railroad map turned on its side, and it just tells the story. Because think about it, this country, everything that has started in this country, from the Spanish arriving here to going to the moon, originated in Florida. So the more and more we keep looking at things, we're like, oh, wait, we started that, not the British here in Florida. So
it's
an amazing piece of art, and we're still on schedule for her to do that.
I think that's a brilliant thing. I remember the day that was all announced, and I wanted to take this opportunity, first of all, to tell the folks at home that you are a St. Pete native. Is that right?
Wasn't born here, but I've been here since 66, so I don't remember Connecticut.
You're a little kid. You don't.
Yes.
A lot of people don't remember Connecticut. So essentially, you're a St. Pete kid.
Yes, I am.
I was born here, then, and I've never been to Connecticut either. You taught. Was it Florida history at St. Pete High?
So it was Florida history and U.S. history at St. Pete High.
For 20 years?
Yes.
How'd you get interested in history?
I've always been a history geek, and I've got to credit my dad for that, because we were very fortunate. My family's from Portugal, so we would go back, you know, every summer and visit my family. And, you know, Portugal has these beautiful beaches and everything that goes with it, but I would be climbing through castles and things like that, because he's the one who gave me that love for history. So even when back in the day when I was in professional soccer with the original Rowdies and the USL and everything, I mean, the history was still my thing. So when I had the opportunity.
Wait, back up. You were a soccer player with the Rowdies.
Well, I worked in the front office. So,
okay.
Yeah, so I was very fortunate to be able to kick a ball once or twice with them.
Now it can be. Told.
But yeah, so I worked for them for about 7 years as their marketing media person.
There you go.
And then I realized that I really wanted to teach, and history was my love. So here I am.
One of the things that I think is so fascinating is the fact that, you know, your personal journey, you zeroed in on St. Petersburg history. As a kid growing up here, I couldn't have cared less. About St. Petersburg history, you know? When your hometown, when all you want to do is kind of get out. I mean, that all changed as I got older and then older. Now it's like I'm fascinated by it. Do you remember a moment or something that happened when you said, wow, this is pretty cool? We talk about Web City all the time.
Right.
And you have memories of being a kid in places like that, and I'm sure Sunken Gardens and all the old stuff. But what was the catalyst there? Wait, this is where I want to go.
I guess it was just the fact that we have such a unique history, and I was in still try to be an avid reader. And I mean, I would read anything I could get my hands on. And even I remember being in elementary school, you know, riding my bike to the Mirror Lake Library and checking out Dunn's book on St. Pete history and reading some of these stories and diving in a little deeper. And of course, there's no internet then. So you had to use the library and microfiche and everything else to do what you could do, right?
Yep.
And just finding out the stories. I mean, everything from, you know, we just have this bizarre history of people who showed up in this town and you know, with a little bit of wealth or a lot of wealth and helped create this city. And
yeah,
and
Williams and Demons and all those guys.
All those guys. And Charles Roser, you know, tied to the, you know, Fig Newton cookie and all this other stuff. You know, it's just, there's just people, you can't make some of this stuff up, right?
Yep.
So,
yep.
Yeah, it was always an amazing history to me.
What kind of shape was the museum in when you got there? I don't remember ever going there as a kid. Was it in sort of disarray?
Well,
was no one taking it seriously anymore? And when did you arrive there, by the way?
So actually, I have to credit Leslie Curran and Connie Cohn for this. Mm-hmm. Leslie, I was teaching Florida history at the time, and Leslie convinced me to join the board of the museum. Then, you know, some of the board members and the staff, you know, that was there found out that I had experience running facilities. So one thing led to another. But the museum during the Great Recession struggled like a lot of nonprofits did, and it came very close to closing its doors. I mean, that's no secret. New board came in, a lot of excitement, a lot of energy, a lot of, you know, events to raise money. People stepped up, you know, to help the city's history. And, you know, you got to thank those volunteers over, you know, the 80 of 101 years that, you know, ran that museum. We had two staffers when I arrived. So little by little, we've been growing the staff. We're up to about 10 now. We're still, you know, vastly understaffed, but, you know, we all wear many hats there. You know, we've you know, made a conscious effort, you know, to put the museum on stable financial ground as well as cultural ground. So, you know, listen, we're in a city where you got to compete with some of the best museums in the world, right?
Sure.
So, you know, we have been working hard to bring in exhibits or create exhibits that, you know, that match what the people are used to in this city. Still all tied into Florida history, which is not that hard.
So explain to me again, you and I have had this conversation many times, how the two-headed calf and the mummy tie into Florida history. Just to put it out there, really.
So you'd be amazed. When we were under construction, we pretty much gutted our main gallery. It still had a 1980s look to it, right?
Yeah.
So we completely gutted it and, you know, made it look all nice and new and straight lines and everything. So the two-headed calf had to go, and it was in my office while that work was happening. I'm betting probably 4 out of 5 days of the week, I got calls from my front desk, and I had to let people come back into my office to see, because they brought their grandkid here to see the two-headed calf, right? So, I mean, it's been in the museum since 1926.
Was it from Ripley's or something?
No, it was from Safety Harbor.
Oh,
it's a local two-headed calf.
Oh, my God, yes. It's got Pinellas County DNA.
So, you know, it's got two heads, six legs, two tails.
Wow. So what about the mummy, though? There is some connection there, too, right?
There is.
An Egyptian mummy.
And the mummy's always been, you know, a situation where, you know, sometimes people have asked us, you know, why we have it, but, you know, how we got it. And, you know, the mummy arrived in St. Pete back in 1924 on a ship that needed some repairs. And when the repairs were done down at Bay Royal Harbor, the captain couldn't pay for him. He didn't have enough money to pay for him. So he gave the dockmaster the mummy and a sarcophagus in exchange for payment. The dockmaster charged a nickel person, whatever it was, for people to come ooh and ah and look at an Egyptian mummy. And then when the bill was paid off, he donated them to the museum. So we've had them since since late 25, I think it was.
That makes it part of St. Petersburg.
It
history,
is. It's part of our folklore. And actually, we're about to embark on creating an Egyptology exhibit. We're working with Pinellas County Schools.
Wow.
Using our mummy as, you know, the centerpiece, of course, but have all kinds of, you know, using smart boards and all kinds of technology I don't really understand, you know, teach the whole subject of Egyptology and ancient Egypt and mummification and everything else, so.
What are the archives like? I mean, I hear these stories, and, you know, Jesse Breckenridge, who works with you in the archives, has talked to me about it many times, that it seems to me that you've just got boxes full of stuff. You know, some of which nobody's even had time to catalog yet.
No.
Because there's some. Do people just donate things all the time?
So the story goes, and these stories are true, actually, that the a couple previous directors would show up in the morning to unlock the door to go to work in the morning, and there'd just be boxes sitting on the doorstep of people donating things. So for, 100 years, you got to remember what St. Pete was like, right? So we had a huge retiree community back in the day.
I remember.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And, when those people passed, their families, would look at us and go, you're the history museum. Here's all the cool old stuff, right, that my grandfather or my grandmother had.
I suspect it wasn't all cool either.
Some of it wasn't, but a lot of it was. So we've been collecting. We've got over 50,000 objects in our collections, and not even counting photographs and tens of thousands of photographs and postcards and everything you can imagine about the city's history. But we're kind of overflowing. So we had to actually go out and, rent a climate-controlled warehouse to start rebuilding our collections area where everything is organized. So and Jessie's done an amazing job. And even she started during COVID. We were very fortunate that we were able to keep our staff intact. And she basically spent that time starting to recatalog our entire collection. So that means photographing, descriptioning, everything, and putting it in a box that's numbered, the object is numbered, and knowing exactly where that object is, which you'd think is, common. But, man, when you have volunteers running a museum.
What do people ask you most about? You're talking about people miss the two-headed calf back in the day. What do they say? What about this? Do they come and they ask you questions about the city's history?
It's most of the time people ask what, we think were the most important eras or points of time in our city's history. Mm-hmm. We get asked that question all the time.
What do you tell them?
Two things. The Spanish arriving, pretty important.
That's important.
Right?
Yeah.
And I think World War II. World War II changes Florida forever. And that to me, second to the Spanish arriving is probably the most important point in our history. Before World War II, we had the smallest population of any state in the South. I mean, the war introduced Florida to millions of American soldiers who then returned with their families to either live or to visit.
And that's right.
Then, of course, Carrier invents the home air conditioning unit.
Yeah, that was
floodgates
important.
Open then.
That was important. I would think that effective mosquito control had something to do with it.
Yeah, absolutely.
Too.
But they're always asking about, our collections. They're always asking where we get things, how we get things.
Mm-hmm.
We get called all the time about people wanting to donate stuff to us. Niles Lochner, who is the grandson of the gentleman who built the Vannoy Hotel.
Oh, Abner, yeah.
He just dropped off a whole bunch of stuff that was, his grandfather's and his great-grandfather's.
Wow.
To us, it's like Christmas. You open these boxes, and you're like, oh, my God. Yeah. You're pulling things out of the box.
I know that feeling so well, but what do you do when it's like, we don't have anywhere to put this, or we don't have an exhibit these can go in now? Is this say in your mind, like, we got all this stuff from the Lochners that's incredible. One day we can put it out and show people,
and that's,
not now.
And that's kind of what we look at. I mean, because sometimes we do get things that we think, man, I don't think we'll ever use this in an exhibit. Doesn't mean it can't be used for reference somewhere later down the road. We do have a collections policy. So we have, a mission statement that our job is Florida history. So if someone gives something to us or tries to give something to us that's not related to Florida history, we usually decline unless there is a tie somewhere. It could be a person that's important to Florida history and this was there, whatever. So and the museum never, in the early days, didn't have that type of collections policy. So they would take anything. And that's the struggle. And I talked to other museum directors around the country, and it's all history museums are the same. They're like, the hardest part of the job is to try not to be a storage facility for cool old stuff.
Yet you have a storage facility,
yes,
except because you've got so much cool old
stuff.
We
had no choice, yeah.
To your mind, Rui, I'll probably make this my last question or very close to it. What's missing still? I mean, just more space. We talked about the renovations. What the expansion? What you want to do? As far as exhibits, what would you really like to have there? Live alligators? I don't know.
Live alligators? That would be awesome.
Yeah, that'd be something that people would.
Oh yeah. The additional space is going to help because it'll free us to use the existing building to create Like, for instance, I'll give you a great example. We just opened an exhibit, and this is, you know, we talked about Jesse earlier. This was all Jesse's, you know.
The women's baby.
Yeah.
Oh, it's fabulous.
So,
yeah.
You know, this exhibit, Meddling, the Women Who Built St. Petersburg,
yes.
This just came out of, originally it started out of a bet between Jesse and I, but, I mean, this just came out of nowhere, and it's been incredibly popular, so popular that we're looking to use additional space to expand the exhibit. So, I mean, there are so many cool stories that haven't been told yet about this area's history or just touched on that we want to dive into. And to do that, you need space, obviously.
Yeah.
And, you know, technology. Because, you know, it's, the days of just, you know, reading panel after panel, you know, in museums are over, right? So we need to mix, you know, video with cool technology. And I'm actually working with someone right now to do a virtual reality situation with the Benoit Airboat we have hanging from the ceiling. So you'll be able to put on a headset and actually fly the Benoit to Tampa. So, I mean, so we're looking at, you know, a lot of those type things to add to the museum to gain or to create more interest in today's younger audience.
Sure.
Which we're finding really does have an interest in history. They just look at it and go about it a different way. I mean, I'll sit there and read, you know, an 800-page book. I don't think that's going to happen a whole lot today, right? So we're looking at different...
shorter attention span.
Yeah, and, you know, there's just so much stuff out there, and people like to play with things and touch things and, you know, and that type of stuff. So, and that's kind of, you know, that's kind of what we're looking at. You know, there's so many stories we haven't told yet that we want to tell, and the way we go about doing it.
I want to fly the Benoit. this is just too cool. You know, you and I have talked about potentially doing a Sunshine Skyway, maybe disaster exhibition, a retrospective. And I mean, there's all when we talked about it, this is totally off subject here because that's way down the road, I suppose. But I could see hearing the Mayday call, you know, and there's other audio and the Walter Cronkite and all kinds of stuff that. So I see what you mean. That, you know, it's more engaging for people who don't just want to look at a black and white picture on a wall and read a panel.
Correct.
Why do you think the women's thing has been so popular? I mean, it is astounding to learn about the women who really had a lot to do with making St. Pete what it is.
Because I think it's a story that's never been told. I mean, when you read any of the St. Pete history books or, you know, the Florida history books, I mean, especially our area here, I mean, who do you learn about? You know, about Snell and Fuller and all these guys who, you know, helped create the city.
Straub.
You know, Straub, of course, right? But you don't hear about the Women's Town Improvement Association that actually was the backbone behind keeping, you know, beautifying these parks and keeping these beautiful waterfront parks. So I think it's just the fact that these stories have been hidden for so long. That, and maybe that's the name of a gallery, right? We'll just call it Hidden History and, you know, all those great stories that have never been told before. But I think that's why it's so popular.
Yeah, that's the stuff that I had uncovered, like the Florida Wildlife Ranch or the Florida Aflame sort of passion play about Seminoles up in Safety Harbor. I rarely found anybody who knew anything about that. And every once in a while on social media, somebody will say, well, my grandmother told me about that. Or somebody older will say, I went as a little kid. You know, that kind of thing. So there's a million stories in the Naked City,
How many people know that there's a circus school here? I mean, when you were a kid growing up in St. Pete, you'd go to Woodlawn. And the rec center there was a circus school.
You've just given me another idea.
Well, I'm telling you.
I didn't know this. Thank you.
So we actually, you know, we do this thing called St. Pete in a Snap, just a quick little newsletter.
Oh, I get those,
And so we did a thing on it and ran a photo of these three little girls, right, on a trapeze thing. And then, of course, I get a text message from my brother-in-law and goes, do you know that's your wife? I'm like, what?
you didn't show her the photograph first?
No, of course not.
Wow.
Yeah. So, I mean, those are, you know, you can't make a, well, I guess you could make an exhibit out of that, but, you know what I mean? There's so many of those cool little stories that people, even growing up here, don't know. I mean, listen, we started historic trolley tours, right?
Yes.
So we take people every month out on historic trolley tours, and most of the times I'm the tour guide. You know, I just love talking about the city's history.
Mm-hmm.
And usually the trolley's filled with residents of the city, longtime residents of the city. And some of the stuff that we go by and talk about, they look at me like I'm speaking a foreign language. They've never heard any of these stories. So we still have a long way to go. We have a lot of stories yet to share.
Well, you know, it's so funny that what you just said made me think of these stories. You just have to be open to them. They come from different places. Mm-hmm. Before the Catalyst started, for another publication, I was taking one of Monica Kyle's history tours on something. We went inside the Playhouse Theater.
Okay.
And it just resonated with me. It was like, this was before I was writing those stories or anything. But I never forgot what she said. This used to be this, and if you look up here, you can see where the arch was, and then they did this. And in the 20s, it was an open-air theater with no roof, mm-hmm. because that's what they did. And I ran with it, you know. And so they do. They come out of anywhere.
They do. They really do.
And well, listen, I think I've taken up enough of your time. Ruby Farias, executive director of St. Petersburg Museum of History, 101 years old. Again, not Ruby, but the museum. And you should definitely go down there. What's the website?
HistorySt.Pete.org.
There it is. And it is open to the public. Costs a pittance to get in and well worth it. Thank you, my friend, for joining us today.
Thank you so much. It was a pleasure being here.